Welcome to USA Football's Coach and Coordinator Podcast, where top football coaches from around the country share their stories, philosophies, concepts, and strategies to help you get better on and off the field. Now, here's your host, Keith Grabowski.
It's another Wednesday on USA Football's Coach and Coordinator Podcast, which means it's Trends Day, the 15th time we've done this one, guys. It's great to be talking ball with you again. Joining me, as always, Charlie Coyner, CEO, founder of First Down Playbook, former NFL and college coach. Charlie, great to be talking ball again.
Keith, great to be back.
And Zach Dunn, who's always watching a ton of football. Zach, looking forward to talking ball with you again as well.
Can't wait, Keith.
All right, guys, so we've seen a lot this year, and, you know, Charlie, last week we talked about, you know, your observation that, man, there's, you start to see these things over and over again, and you see them in different places, and, well, that's kind of what we saw this past week, one of the best weeks of the year probably for watching football. You got some time off, and there's football on just about every day of this week, you know, a couple or three games on Thursday. I'm sure everybody got to sit around after they ate their turkey dinner and watch some football then. We have a full day on Friday, Saturday, and Sunday of football. So I know we watched a lot here. I wanted to start with something we've been talking about for a few weeks now, though, the really seeing teams squeeze all they can out of the special teams phase of the game. And we saw that kind of come to light in making a difference in a few games. The biggest one was the Alabama-Auburn game, where at the end of the game, we have the Auburn team kind of, Gus Malzahn said he kind of had saved this play, and his intention wasn't necessarily to get a penalty out of it and get the first down. It was just to keep their punt returner off the field, and, you know, it worked out even more for him in that they were able to keep the football and take a knee.
Yeah, Keith, and we talked about this morning a little bit, and it's hard to gauge, you know, how a coach will react. And Nick Saban reacted that he didn't think that they gave him enough time to get personnel on and off the field and all that, but really, when you look at it, this is an age-old deal that has been done many times before. We always had it in our special teams repertoire to where you would do that to essentially maybe steal a timeout, and it might not be at the end of the game. It might be the first quarter, second quarter. Just run people out there, run your punt team out there, and have your quarterback out there as well. And, you know, they've got to call timeout because you may have stuck in some skilled people with them. But this deal right here was really smart from a standpoint of just that point in the game to when it happened. Alabama not recognizing who was on the field, but not communicating to the returner. And it goes to show, we're talking about some other plays here, that at the highest level of football, I mean, the communication is critical. I've seen that happen before to where all of the other 10 guys get coached up while they're on the field about something that's been recognized, but the one guy that really matters, meaning the return. That's exactly what happened here. They made all these adjustments, and bless his heart, there was probably some GA that was responsible for the returner. I'm sure that wasn't a fun night for them. But, I mean, 10-second runoff and steal the game. But you stop and look at it now. The two Iron Bowls that Auburn has won something to do with special teams. And, you know, those are the kind of keep you up at night and tossing and turning if you're at Alabama.
I know I saw, you know, a pretty – it did make a difference in the game, but it was a pretty smart version. We've seen some of these things before where you get in like you're going to kick a field goal, and then you just drop back a little bit and pooch punt it. The Browns did that to success. They ended up downing the ball on the 1 yard line against the Steelers. Now, they weren't able to get their stuff together that made a difference in the game, but another one of those opportunities that you keep them from returning it, right? You want to play the field position battle, and, you know, maybe you are just slightly out of your kicker's range. I think that's a good opportunity to look at utilizing a different personnel to keep their returner off the field as well.
I love that play. I think it's a play. Flashback. Sometimes I think I'm maybe getting like Johnny Major. Johnny Major used to come into our staff room in 2012 when I was at Tennessee, and I think he always did, talking about quick kicking, right? But I've always thought that with the weather and the different things that are involved, that if you're sitting there and you're too far out for a field goal, yet if you punt the ball, you won't have a returner back there that's going to field it or, you know, keep it. It just usually doesn't work out. But if your place kicker can take that snap directly and just kind of lay it down back there in the corner and they're not really looking to return it, that is a tremendous play, particularly this time of year. So a lot of good special team coaching going on right now. We looked at yesterday on the All-22 Tuesday. I mean, you look at the Miami Dolphins not having a great year, first-year head coach, but trying to establish some things, and Philadelphia comes in there, and they go to their high school playbook. And Keith, yesterday you called it Lonesome Polecat, and there's a lot of different names for it, but a lot of high school coaches do this. They lined up and had three guys on the line of scrimmage way out to the sideline to the left, same thing to the right, and two players off of the ball that were obviously eligible, and then they had this snapper in the middle of the field kind of all by himself with the, I guess it was the punter, and the place kicker was lined up in the slot off to the left. So they snapped the ball, the punter sprinted to the left and shoveled the ball to the place kicker, who was uncovered because one of the Philadelphia defenders had turned him loose. And so, you know, just coaches looking for a way to make you think, make you have to play football. And in that case right there, any high school coach out there understands that you're going to get variations of that formation that may even have the center be eligible, the snapper be eligible, and you've got to come out and be able to count who's eligible and who's not, on the ball, off the ball, into the line of scrimmage. So a lot of good things happening just sitting there on Thursday, Friday, and Saturday, watching the number of kickoff returns that you know, go to the house and change games right off the bat. So I think something not to forget about when you talk about the NFL and you talk about college football this time of year, particularly the NFL, when you start getting people hurt, and we talked about this with Bobby April last year when he was on your Coaching Coordinator podcast, when you start getting people hurt, what happens is the next guy underneath him gets bumped up. And guess what that guy's been playing the first 8-9 weeks of the season? Well, he's been probably one of your better special team players. So what happens is you start pulling off the special teams unit on kickoff cover and punt cover because they're now playing, you know, a lot on defense. And now you're playing those guys that have been on the practice squad or guys you picked up off the street. Now they're the people that end up playing on special teams. And so my job when I worked for Dave Tobe, when I did that for the Chicago Bears special teams, was to go every week and to track the personnel who was the new guy. Because we would look not only to target talent, we were going to target a new guy that we knew they had either got for a trade or bumped up from a practice squad, because that guy right there was the guy that was going to be someone who was probably going to be out of place or didn't fit exactly right when you try to take advantage of him this time of year.
Yeah, I saw that happen a couple times in high school ball this year where, you know, a player was moved for, you know, whatever reason might be, maybe because he was playing some other things a little bit more or whatever. And, you know, it's that situation where that backup just isn't as good and something happens. I mean, he doesn't squeeze a lane like he's supposed to. It's just different. And this is, you know, not necessarily the time of the year to be teaching all that stuff. And I know everybody always looks back at cutting back on practice and legs a little bit, so it probably does not get repped as much. So I think it's something up front. You got to think about those plans. And I think one of the best things Coach April shared with us on that that podcast, and it's still up on our blogs, we'll include a link in our show notes to this, is his chart, which, you know, kind of dictated how much a guy played and, you know, where he could get his reps, because you have to have people ready and able to do those jobs if the opportunity arises.
You bring up a good point, Keith, about that, because, you know, you have the coaches say, well, this time of year, if you're playing for a playoff spot or this and that and the other, then that guy's just going to have to go. Well, yeah, that's easier said than done. I mean, you're out there and all of a sudden, you know, you play 12 snaps on offense, and now you're going to, you know, you score a touchdown, and now you're going to throw him out there on kickoff, you know, something he's been doing. So it's a hard decision to make, but it's, I'll never forget, once again, Dave Tobe looking at me and going, you know, I don't remember who we were playing, but they had two or three new guys in there. Whenever you're going to double somebody on a return in special teams, well, then that means that somebody else is going to not be blocked. And so we would, you know, obviously double the people that had made the most plays, and the new guy was going to have to prove to us that he could go make a play because he might not be blocked. We would scheme it up that way. So a lot of that going on right now at probably the NFL and the college.
You know, following the trends of the season, I think, is an important thing. And, you know, you start to pick up things in games you might want to think about covering. And we mentioned one from the Alabama-LSU game a few weeks ago. And I saw it, you know, initially I didn't think about what it was. And I thought, man, that they just did what Alabama did to LSU. It was Ohio State, Michigan. I texted both of you guys. And, you know, they looked to the sideline, looked back real quick and got the ball and snapped it. And one of the fastest receivers from Ohio State, Olave, is running down the sideline and ball hits off of his face mask. He didn't make the catch, but he had him beat for a touchdown. It was the same thing that, you know, Alabama did to LSU, that Alabama had been looking over the sideline, getting up the ball, false cadence, look over the sideline, change the play, you know, getting the defense into a lull, thinking they had time to look at it. And it was the exact same thing. Guys playing tight on him. They look over the sideline to their defensive coordinator, and there he goes down the sideline. So, you know, it's one of those things. We've said it multiple times where we've seen teams pick up ideas from different leagues, different conferences, different levels. This stuff comes back, and you just have to, I think sometimes you might say, well, we'll never see that. But you got to remember, every coach is sitting around at some point during the weekend and sees those highlights or whatever it might be. They might get an idea. So if it's something out of the ordinary, it's probably worth covering with your offense or defense.
To me, Keith, I look at that and go, that is truly unique to this year for me. And maybe I'm just outdated. I don't know. But I've never seen that before with Alabama did. In an orchestrated way. When I first saw Alabama do it, I thought it just happened, to be honest. And then, you guys are the ones that pointed out that, no, they actually did that. You know, they timed it up that way. And so to have people have that show up in another, you know, in the Big Ten, the same year that it showed up in the SEC, to me speaks more, you know, than just about that one play. It speaks to exactly what you're saying. Guys are out there watching and if it makes sense. Now, sometimes you see things work and you go like, well, that might have just been the right play at the right time or whatever. But when it makes sense in a broad spectrum like that, then yeah, you can expect to see that. You're going to see that in high school. That's going to happen again if it keeps on.
Well, it was the same thing, you know, saw another variation of what now has become known as Philly Special. It's a game we talked about on All 22 Tuesday yesterday. We'll share the links to that video as well. But you know, very much like that play design where the ball starts one way, is pitched back to another guy who hits somebody coming out of the backfield. Now, in this case, they didn't choose to bring their quarterback out of the backfield. They just wheeled the back there. But everything else really in the play design was pretty much similar to how you would set that play up with, you know, the end around and the reverse back the other way. So these things, you know, again, you don't have to always run it the exact same way, but you look at the setup of the play and what they're trying to do. And obviously it was very effective in a big game on Thursday.
That was no easy task that Buffalo had going into Dallas on Thanksgiving, all the commotion going on at Dallas. You knew that, you know, Dallas was going to give them their best shot with their backs against the wall, and the Buffalo team, it was impressive. That quarterback is very impressive. But the play that you're talking about right now, and we've seen so much of just reverses and jet sweeps and arounds, and just had a little bit of all that in it. And the thing that Buffalo did that was a little bit different was that they pulled the right guard away from the pass, and had both linebackers from Dallas really, you know, really run into the wrong side before they rallied and came back. So yeah, excellent play. You pointed out yesterday, Keith, that, you know, you got your receiver going to the right because obviously, you know, he doesn't do this for a living. But he never really had to break stride much, and neither did the running back that caught it for a touchdown.
Well, I know another thing we've been tracking on throughout the season, in addition to the incredible amount of mesh and shallow crossers that we see, has been the use of what we've termed second-level screens. In other words, a screen that is happening with receivers blocking down the field after they've stemmed what looks like a route, and you know the line's just in there protecting. So there's not necessarily a screen key that your linebackers or defensive backs are going to stop what they're doing as far as covering a route and start fighting a block, but it's exactly what's happening. And Zach, I think you pointed out to me when we first started talking about this, Notre Dame's version of this, which looks like just an angle route or a Texas route coming out of the backfield thrown behind the line, but the receivers are getting into basically the alley there to create an alley for this guy. And we saw Ohio State do this against Michigan. Definitely, you know, very close to or may even been a yard or two illegal by being thrown downfield. But I mean, looking at the play, there's definitely at least one guy who had no intentions of doing anything but blocking somebody down the field.
Yeah, Keith. So on that play you're talking about, Ryan Day knew what type of coverage he was going to get from Don Brown in Michigan down there in the red zone. Michigan plays a lot of their double coverage, which is like your old, which is like your red quarters, where they're going to double the number one receiver weak, and they're going to double number three to the trip side. And what they did was that they ran a Texas route, like you said, with the back. But I think part of what made this even better is that Ryan Day and OSU had so many wheel routes out of the backfield to the running back, but that linebacker was so worried about fighting over the top of the number one receiver weak that he got caught up in the mesh. I mean, without even – I don't think the receiver even really had to go try to hunt him up because he was trying to work over the top of that receiver so fast that Dobbins put his foot back in the ground and cut back across the middle on the Texas route. And, you know, it was just a great game plan by Day. You know, I think it was something that he had probably kept in his back pocket all year known. Heck, probably something he had in his game plan last year, but just didn't get to when they put up 62 points. But, yeah, I mean, obviously Ryan Day and his staff obviously have given Don Brown and that staff a lot of problems the past few years because they do a lot of good stuff with wheel routes, with mesh routes, crossers. I mean, they just really know how to bust man coverage. And if you're going to sit man coverage all day, and especially sit with guys on the same level, they're gonna pick you to death. And you know, most of them are actually legal picks. So there's mesh routes. It's halftime, it's just guys running. It's defensive players running into each other. It's not even Ohio State really trying to pick them. So I mean, you can't sit in man. I mean, this is my opinion, but you can't sit in man coverage with a team like Ohio State because they got such good athletes, and it's just so tough for your guys to hold up that long, especially when they got that offensive line, that quarterback, and those receivers.
We are heading quickly into clinic season, and Charlie, going back to week one of our Trends Day, we started out by just looking at some NFL games and what, you know, preseason, what teams were doing to get their rookie quarterback in a groove, and very much like the kind of concepts, you know, as we talked about it, that you would do as a high school coach with a young quarterback playing in his first varsity game, that you want to do some things that make it easy for him. And, you know, as I look, if I were planning ahead to, you know, next season, beginning of the year, especially in some tougher situations, I mean, you don't always have the luxury of waiting, you know, three or four plays in to call play down the field for your quarterback. You know, I mean, sometimes it happens right there in that first series. So what do you do when you get that third and long, a 7, 8, 9, or maybe you're in the red zone and it's getting tougher down there playing a lot of man? This is where these, you know, again, we've turned second level screens, I think, come into play and really give you an opportunity to convert without having to do a whole lot of reading of the defense. You know where your guy's going to be. That guy knows where the blocking is going to be. All the quarterback has to do initially is get eyes downfield and then come off and make that throw.
I think that's exactly what's going on. I think that it's just a progression of really how many people can throw the ball down the field like the Mannings, like the Bradys. I think a lot of coaches are starting to bring the game to the players instead of make the players go to the game. Screens that are coming, you know, 7-on-7 even, what you've seen in high school, what you've seen in college. I looked at the screen that we did yesterday for All 22 Tuesday, and you know that screen for the touchdown that we did was delivered right on the hash. And you got to believe that you know the landmarks are simple. Where you're talking about, this is where you're going to be at this point. This is where you're going to have the ball come out of your hand and where it needs to meet the receiver. So, yeah, I think you're onto something there from the standpoint of it's just a way that you can help a young quarterback grow at the NFL level. And I don't know, I think the jump is bigger from high school to college probably than it is college to the NFL with some of those things.
And I know I said early on in the year as we started tracking on this and seeing more and more of these screens being used that I thought at some point we would see some kind of down-the-field shot developed off of these where it looks like they're going to run the Texas screen and then you hit a guy on a corner route or something like that. And now we haven't seen it, and we have bowl season coming up, so there's still that possibility we may see it. But definitely a trend I think worth looking at, worth exploring here this offseason as we finish up this series. Just so you know, we have planned, we're going to go one more Wednesday, Trends Day here, following the championship week that's coming up. And then we're going to go on hiatus here a little bit till right after the bowls. And we'll talk about what we saw during the bowl season, as well as take a look at what's going to be talked about out there in the clinics and, you know, what we see as far as trends in the clinic schedule and what people are talking about. So, guys, it's been another great week of this, another great season of watching football. So we'll do this one more time. And like I said, we'll wrap things up then in the new year. Thanks again for taking part in this, Charlie and Zach.
Thank you, Keith. Great to be here.
Thanks for listening to USA Football's Coach and Coordinator Podcast. For more resources, visit the Coach Performance Center at usafootball.com.